It's June 19th, 2009. This is 508, a show about Worcester. Hi, I'm Mike Benedetti, and here we are with Tracy Novick. Hi, Tracy.
Good morning, Mike.
And Brendan Mallican.
Morning. Indoors, finally, celebrating the 743rd day of rain in the city of Worcester.
Yes, very exciting. We're here at Tracy's house. Tracy, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well, thank you.
The lovely home that you have here.
a little rainy.
Yes. And Tracy is running for school committee in the upcoming election, but we're not going to talk about this today. But we should just give us an opportunity to mention that if you are running as a challenger for any public office in the upcoming election, please contact us at pieandcoffee@gmail.com, and we'll get you on the show. We'll give you 90 seconds to state your case why we should vote for you, and then we'll ask you hard but respectful questions.
With all three challengers, that means we could probably fit them all in one segment and only eat up, what is it, about 2 minutes of time? Three minutes of time.
Like about a fifth of one show. Also wanted to mention that we are now arguably the first Worcester program that is an equal citizen of both the internet and the cable system. We're here also on WCCA on very early Tuesday mornings and very late Tuesday mornings. One of the less wonderful time slots in WCCA, but we are on TV. And if you're watching us on TV, can you gesture?
Sure. Am I going up this way?
You'll see this. Countdown timer, which will tell you how much longer you have to tolerate the show. If you're watching on the internet, you'll see
that countdown timer
at the bottom of the screen. Wonderful. I don't know. The first thing I wanted to ask is I've been thinking about shopping locally, and I wanted to ask you guys about this. I like the idea of a local economy. I like the fact that it sort of makes you safer from sort of very brittle global networks, food distribution network, or, you know, some certain energy, financial network, most obviously, a fairly brittle global network. I like the idea that, you know, it builds a community and it keeps skills in the area and things like this. And I still have some questions, though, about what exactly the value of local, buying locally is. And I wonder if you guys had any brief thoughts on this.
That means we can't get bananas in January, right?
Buying locally. Yeah. Well, that would be one thing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of food, that's one of the limitations of living in New England. I mean, there's a reason why all of the pilgrim stories seem to be about them eating squash, because there's a lot of squash and it lasts a long time. No, but from what the Worcester local drive seems to be, a lot of it is around the small businesses that employ local people and that kind of thing. And, I mean, I'd rather shop at a small local business than, you know, go to a big box store. The problem is that, I mean, there are limitations there as well, but given a choice, I guess I would do that.
Okay.
When there is a choice.
Okay. Brendan Mallican?
I am in no way rabid about shopping locally, but the one thing that I would say is that, and this is just from deep-seated paranoia, the idea of a local network of locally produced, locally sourced products, not just food, but like even consumer goods, or the ability to repair things locally, is something that has always made me very comfortable in the sense that, you know, we have a fragile distribution system internationally or globally for especially consumer goods and food products. At this point, almost completely dependent on the price of fuel. So, I mean, if you can almost put a ripple into any one aspect of the distribution chain that makes our global supply network for products possible. And if that starts to collapse, all we have left is, you know, local goods. I'm building that giant Walmart down at 146 now. It would only take a less than significant rise in fuel costs to make the great deal on mini blinds no longer available. And then we're going to need to find a local mini blind producer. And I don't know that we have the ability. I think we've given up our ability to produce mini blinds locally. And that's something that we should all keep in
mind. They're easier to produce than regular blinds.
Are they?
They're smaller.
They are smaller.
Yes. You could have a mini factory.
A mini factory for, yes. Hey, we could probably have a banana tree inside of the glass building downtown too. So enough light.
We could grow a banana. That would be wonderful. So I wanted to. Let's talk about school funding next. What do you think?
I think we should fund them.
You think we should fund the
school?
I think we should fund the schools.
Because I guess they passed the budget yesterday.
They passed the budget last night. Yes, they did.
Okay.
$290 some million, yes.
Well, because, you know, I'm here representing the people who, I'm representing both the people who do not have kids and the people who are not products of the Worcester County school system.
Sure.
And I'm aware that there are schools in Worcester. Public schools.
There are children in Worcester.
I know there's definitely children in Worcester. Children are great. schools I don't
He's
know anything
favorite
about.
Children.
I'm definitely favorite of children. Public school, I don't know. But like my impression as someone who so does not follow the story at all is that like it's like not clear to me that they're like, you know, like are they like going to shut the school system down or they so there is money and stuff for next year. I like literally am not very aware of
this. Oh yeah.
I know they're like
we actually worked at this year worked out fine. This year because of two things actually. First of all, because the city manager said that we weren't going to do mid-year layoffs because when the numbers came in for the tax revenues for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and the state came to Worcester and said, look, we don't have enough money to actually even fund this year, so fiscal 09, there were communities that moved towards laying off teachers. That was when we fired all those people that worked for the city in whatever that was, March. Okay. The city council and the city manager said we're not doing that to teachers, so I didn't have a crying kindergartner coming home telling me that her teacher was being laid off, which was a relief. Next year, which is fiscal 10, is being level funded as to this year.
But so we're spending the same amount of money next year that we did this year?
Basically, I mean, there are some minor increases and some minor decreases around, you know, we're paying a little bit more for this and a little bit less for that. But we're not laying off any teachers. We're not losing any staff. We're not losing any programs. Entirely, however, because of federal stimulus money. The federal stimulus money that went from the federal government to the state is a bunch of that is going then to straight to education. In fact, Worcester would have been $14 million short in its state funding for education if we weren't getting stimulus money.
Okay.
So we would have been laying off 250 teachers this year if we hadn't gotten the federal stimulus money. Now, that unfortunately actually runs out this year as opposed to next year when it was supposed to, because the governor has said that because we're so short on our tax revenues for fiscal year 09, we're actually having to use next year's stimulus money to make up this past year. So the axe was supposed to fall in fiscal year 12. It's actually going to fall in fiscal year 11. So this time next year, we're going to be having some really painful conversations.
Okay.
And pretty
because
much...
Because there's not going to be... Unless there's, like, some other gigantic stimulus package,
unless there's some other
it.
Magic money that... Right, because we've already actually spent not only this year's magic money, but next year's magic money. So unless there's new magic money that somehow comes from somewhere, yeah, we're going to have some pretty hard conversations. And the thing that bothered me about last night's conversation at the school committee and then 2 weeks ago's conversation at the school committee was that there was basically no effort made to try to cushion any blows. They didn't really make any changes to the budget at all.
What do you mean cushion blows?
Well, I mean, you think that this would be the time to say, okay, look, maybe we should buy 2 years worth of school supplies and we can then use next year's supply budget to pay for a few more teachers to hang on. Or maybe we this year cut everything that's absolutely not necessary and use that money to throw at technology because we won't have any money to pay for technology next year or something
okay.
like that.
Okay.
And nobody did anything like that at all.
Hmm.
Nothing.
Brendan Milliken, any comment?
You know, I think that raises more questions than anything. I'm completely naive when it comes to funding. But I mean, what is our contribution from the state now for?
The state pays for about
like percentage-wise,
two-thirds of the Worcester Public Schools budget.
So conceivably, if things got worse at the state level, we could basically just not have schools. I mean,
The city, the schools are the largest employer in the city of Worcester. They have about, I think it's about 2,800 employees. So if you're laying off 400 of those teachers, I mean, that's a huge percentage. And that's my question is, how are we going to do this with that many fewer teachers? I don't have any idea.
Yeah.
I really don't. I mean, people are saying, okay, we're going to have to close schools and we're going to have to lay off teachers, we're going to have to lay off principals. Sure, but you still have the same. In fact, we have more kids. The last 2 years, the kindergarten classes have been bigger than they were for the preceding years. So we've actually got more kids coming into the system. I don't even know where we're going to put them, let alone how we're going to teach them.
Yeah. The one thing that I can't wrap my head around is what you just stated, that we're not doing any sort of planning for the future.
No.
You know, it's like, even on the small things, like we could probably just hedge our bets and assume that the cost of pencils or in paper clips is not going to go down. So if you have any, you just empty the coin jars, right, and buy everything, hoard whatever you can now, because it's only going to get worse in the future. And it doesn't seem, the same holds true for the city council too. I mean, there seems to be no ability to plan ahead. Everything is focused on what's taking place right now, what we can do to soften the blow of what we need to do today. But let's not even mention the future, as if tomorrow doesn't exist. I've never really been able to wrap my head around that.
I mean, I can only imagine that there have been enough cases in which things have changed over the course of the year that they assume that things are going to change in such radical ways that we can't even imagine. But to that end, does it hurt to have a couple extra reams of paper on the shelf? I mean, would it be bad to have, you know, upgraded software this year rather than, you know, not. I mean, that's the part. I mean, there were a couple of mentions last night when they were talking about the budget, where people were saying, oh, you know, we're going to have to lay off 400 teachers next year, so we shouldn't do this year, in terms of someone trying to add a position back in and that kind of a thing. But beyond that, there wasn't anything. There wasn't. And it felt like this was the year where we should have said, okay, we whack every extra program. We say, look, if you want anything that's extra at all, you're going to have to do private fundraising because we're not doing it at a public level. And we're throwing all of this money at making sure that we're not spending any extra money on electricity, that we're not spending any extra money on heat, that we're, you know, that we've got everything as tip-top shape as we possibly can, given the constraints of finances. And that didn't happen. Hmm. And nobody suggested it, and it wasn't really a conversation that happened.
All right. Well, one unfortunate thing about us being on television is that we have to move on. We only have a half an hour rather than the capacity of the entire internet.
Are we commercial-free on the television?
We are commercial-free. We actually...
We're not sponsored by, Walmart or something like that.
We have no sponsor. We have no... I should mention that if you would like to underwrite this program, it would be fantastic for you to underwrite this program. Contact us again at pieandcoffee@gmail.com. If you are watching this on the TV and you want to see the internet version of the show, you can't imagine what that would be or how that would be allowed. That's also at pieandcoffee.org. I wanted to mention a couple of things. On Thursday, June the 25th, there's an event at the Dive Bar in Worcester, the next Blogger Beer. This will be an opportunity for people who come home at the end of the day and put their pajamas on and type on the computer to leave their normal clothes on for another hour and have a beer. You're supposed to wear your pajamas when you blog, though. That's like part of the deal.
Really?
I don't know if you know this.
I'm really glad I didn't wear my pajamas to the school committee meeting yesterday. That probably would have been a little shocking.
There you go. Well, we should mention Tracy is the author of my favorite blog in Worcester, the Greater Worcester Land Trust Cascading Waters blog, sort of the Enviro blog of the city. Brendan here, radioball.net.
Being a neighbor, I also love Tracy's blog because it means I don't have to actually go outside to see what the weather's like.
There
I
you
get
go.
Full weather reports
do
daily.
You
don't have to trust weather.com either. How do those people know? How would they know?
If
how
I was
could they
trusting
know?
weather.com, I would be predicting 12 more days of rain ahead
at least.
Yeah. So
building an ark in
your
backyard.
Also, that will be an event. Also for community media types, if you're watching this on WCCA, you are a community media type probably. That's a good indie media people, whoever to come in. Kuan Yin is closing. This is one of Worcester's sort of original all-vegan restaurants. It specializes in the Chinese style of cooking, which involves creating a lot of mock meats. As I understand it, this was sort of came out of a Buddhist tradition in China, and at some point the emperor was like had to like fast from meat for a week, and he said to his chefs, "We need you to make something out of plants that tastes like meat because I'm willing to, you know, I'm not interested in the spirit of the law, but the letter of the law I could go with." So this has become like a thing now, and you have two restaurants, both of them associated with the Supreme Master religious movement. Do you guys
not familiar?
Follow Supreme Master? You know this?
I know that that's who's behind Kuan Yin.
Well, they're behind Kuan Yin and Buddha Hut, and actually, they think that they're related. So the people from Kuan Yin, which I actually like better than Buddha Hut, are going over to Buddha Hut to help with that operation.
There goes that sponsor.
Well, there you go. And if you have never seen The Supreme Master, and you're interested in graphic design, you owe it to yourself to watch a little bit of Supreme Master online. They subtitle it, I think, in literally 9 languages, maybe 12 languages sometimes.
Is there room for anything else left on the screen?
And you've got
bingo.
That clock thing going on.
Bingo.
Does this signal the end or the beginning of the beginning of the end for the vegetarian renaissance that you've been talking about for the last 3 weeks?
I think it could symbolize the beginning of the end. Or however, this week, supposedly this week,
say,
somebody
week
may
renaissance.
Actually
this
have.
This
was long. That's what I said. I said it'd be about a month.
Somebody tells me this will not hit the history books.
I think that Buddha Hut is actually doing a fundraising buffet for Veg Worcester in 2 weeks from now, which we'll talk about.
You
get it? I don't even know what the date
it's
is.
On Facebook. July.
July 11th.
July 11th. Yeah, I think.
All right. There you go.
They better speed up those presses, though. I mean, the guidebooks are going to be on the street after the Renaissance is over, which is not necessarily.
Well, the guidebooks. So I think the guidebooks actually may be in the city of Worcester at this point in a box. I haven't seen this box, but I think they may be. In which case, that gives it an extra week of Renaissance. I think a month of a vegetarian Renaissance is impressive in itself.
We could look at the guidebook as a souvenir sort of thing too. Like, I mean, you get a
remember that vegetarian Renaissance
program that you get at a Red Sox game. it. I mean, you're at the game, so you don't really need the program to tell you what's going on, but it helps you remember 20 years later that you went to that game.
There you go.
Were here in Worcester for the Renaissance.
There you go. I wanted to mention one complaint about news coverage that, you know, so the city council has been wanting to vote on a quarry ordinance talking about the city sort of, how far back is it going to look in people's criminal records when considering whether or not to hire them? This has sort of been, I think, in the public safety subcommittee, maybe.
Yeah.
And I guess last Friday or late last week, they had finally made a decision, which was widely reported in the papers. Like, they has come out of their subcommittee. It had, like, was almost going to go to the council, and the city manager had some problems with it. So they rewrote some of the language, and it came through the subcommittee fine. And then Tuesday, it wasn't voted on. And I think that the reason it wasn't voted on, based on secondhand or based on people who talked to the clerk, is that the clerk screwed something up. And so it wasn't voted on Tuesday, but it will be voted on next Tuesday. But I was disappointed that, like, to see that, like, this was not mentioned in Worcester Magazine or in the TNG, that, like, oh yeah, remember the big story that we've been, like, hyping you about for the city council meeting? Like, oh yeah, you know why it didn't happen? Like,
the clerk left it at home.
The clerk ate it or something. Like, it's just a one sentence thing. I just was kind of disappointed that they didn't, like, follow up on that. And if you're watching this, this is your chance to do us right. I wanted to mention the In-City Times. Oh, this is a lot of me talking to the camera right now.
That's fine.
I want to mention the In-City Times, which I, you know, despite myself, I continue to find a delight. There's an amazing online article this week. Don't know if it's in the print edition. Basically, one of these sort of angry attacks on one individual, who, as far as I can tell, is sort of a good friend of the editor, so I'm not sure what's going on here. Angry attack on one individual. In this case, the issue is around, of all things, contractors not putting their contractor number in their newspaper advertisements. So if this sounds to you like something you're curious about, read the article. Otherwise, it's not really newsworthy, but sort of odd. I wanted to ask you, Brendan, about your visit to the ancient city of Machu Picchu.
Yeah, that was...
or what is this thing called?
Lost City. I actually don't know how to pronounce it.
Pikachu.
I feel terrible that after a week...
Pichacucha.
Did they not mention it?
That might be it.
I think it's Pichacucha.
It's one of those words that when you look at it, you instantly forget how to pronounce it.
Oh, okay.
Like, it doesn't help by looking at the word.
Okay. What was this?
Well, it's essentially a public speaking event that... if I'm not mistaken, the folks who organized it are out of Australia, at least the people who were doing a simulcast introducing the event at Bacado this past Sunday. They seem to have either Australian accents or possibly New Zealand accents.
Is this like a Maori word, maybe?
It could be. It's a public speaking event where you bring interesting people, or people who are prior to the event perceived as being interesting, and you give them basically 20 slides worth of essentially what's like a PowerPoint presentation,
okay.
A little bit more interactive. Not boring like, you know, PowerPoint, just text and, you know,
yeah.
Clip art, but like actual photographs of people, of what people do, or video frames and whatnot. And it's people just talking about themselves, basically. So you've got a lot of artists, you've got some performers. There was a comedian or someone who does improv that was there.
Are these local people?
A few of them were local. Some of them were from out of the area, and a few of them were people I've never encountered before. But what was it was, I don't want to use flowery words like inspiring, but that was pretty close to what it was. You had a full room at Bacado of people I've never laid eyes on before from the city of Worcester, local
mm-hmm.
residents who came out for this event,
yeah.
just to see what other artists, performing artists, and just relatively interesting people, what they do to find inspiration in their work. And it was great. I mean, they're very short form presentations.
How long? Do you have any sense how long they were?
I think they were 5-minute presentations,
okay.
tops. Very, very, it might have even been 2 minutes.
Uh-huh.
They were quick. And most of the people that were doing them were doing off the top of the head, not a lot of notes and what have you. And the presenters did a really good job of, I think, working with the crowd to keep it flowing and entertaining. What was great, though, was that the turnout, again, it wasn't a very clicky sort of thing. There was not, like, one group represented in the...
Kinds of folks.
I've been to enough networking events and whatnot where you tend to get into a room expecting to meet everybody that's going to inspire you to do something new in your life. You get there and you end up hanging out with the same people that you knew
right.
last week, and it's less than inspiring. This was great. I mean, there are even some of the local artists who I'm familiar with were able in a very short period of time to go a little bit more in depth into their work and learn a lot more about not necessarily the artists, but the process that they use to produce their work.
This sounds like it was kind of like a TED Talks.
It was very much like the TED Talks on a much more local level and not focused on a specific issue. You know, the people were more or less talking about themselves and what they do
right.
I guess the best way to define it was short form presentations on people trying to define themselves publicly, or how they define themselves for the public, and then going through the process that helps them actually define themselves. It was interesting stuff. I hope to see another one in the city.
Are you going to speak at the next one?
I wasn't asked to. I guess I could. I think I already went over my time, though, so I don't know how that would work.
All right. Well, that's what I think about whenever I think about an event like that, is I always think about, like, what could I say on this?
What could I do in 2 minutes?
Why aren't I up there? That sounds great. I'm glad to hear about it. It's always good to hear about, like, new, exciting stuff.
Yeah, it was Cindy Worley, Scott Zoback, and Michelle May, I think I hope I didn't leave anyone out there, were the people who put this together or brought it to Worcester. And if you go to the website, which I can't tell you because I can't pronounce the word, but maybe we can link to it.
It would be Pokemon.com.
Yeah, Pokemon.com, or MachuPicchu.org. But the website does a great job of cataloging photographs from all the... It's an international movement. It's not something that just happened here in Worcester. So you can find these presentations in just about every minor city throughout the world. Photographs and video from all those presentations, and notes on the presenters for each one of those events. It's a pretty big deal globally, and it's nice to see Worcester partaking in something like that.
Awesome. Well, we could talk about open space, or we could talk about something else. We have a couple of minutes left.
Well, what else is still on your list?
That's it. There's something that I can't... Maybe people at home. You see that item?
No
idea. I don't know what that says. It sounds like it says Reeler Feed, Reeler Fiend. I have no idea what that is. So what is there to say about open space?
Well, no, it was in the... There was a thing in the paper yesterday, right? There was an Urban Land Trust conference in Lowell a couple weeks back, which sort of got... Because the Commonwealth previously had been focusing on buying open space outside of urban areas, the urban areas kind of got together and said, okay, how can we get together and talk about what we do and make it interesting and share the ways in which we get funding and that kind of a thing. So
okay.
Leominster and Lowell and Worcester and so forth have gotten together and been doing some of that. So
this isn't like policy changes. This is just figuring out how to fund
policy.
It.
Although there, well, here's the thing, actually, there has been a bit of a policy change, which is that the state is actually focusing some of the open space funding on urban areas now. They've actually said they're going to devote a particular percentage, which I think is a third, but I might have my stuff wrong, to urban areas and making sure that urban areas get open space funding.
Right. Did you see this thing about how the federal government was talking about bulldozing large sections of Flint, Michigan, and turning them into open space?
And turning them into open space. I've heard a couple of things about Flint, and I know that they've been trying to put in community gardens and things like that in a lot of their sort of deserted lots and that kind of thing. Yeah, they've been... It's almost as though Flint has been trying to be sort of on the cusp of the next sort of what do we do with cities kind of movement.
It seemed kind of wild to me. The article I read was a British article. I haven't seen anything in the American press about it. Maybe they were just amused by this idea that the Americans are going to start bulldozing their
their auto industry,
their cities. They're just going to take their cities out.
The reason that the British would be amused is they're so much better at sort of high density housing than the Americans have ever been. It never occurred to us to sort of build out. We've always had these sort of big sprawling buildings or low density housing and. Mm-hmm. If Flint does some of what they're talking about, they would be sort of making the housing portions more dense and taking some of the open space and turning it into things like community gardens and parks and that kind of thing, which would be, great, but we'll see.
I mean, the three of us pooled all of our money that we have in our pockets right now together. We could probably buy a neighborhood in Michigan at this point.
So. This is the thing in Detroit, right? A friend of mine...
Yeah, you can buy under $1,000, you can buy a house. The problem with that, of course, is that you take on the tax burden.
Right.
We'll probably go back 10 years of unpaid tax liens and whatnot. But
don't they have whole neighborhoods in Detroit where you can buy houses for a dollar plus taxes each?
I don't know that they've gotten to where Baltimore was in the 70s where they're doing the dollar house transactions.
I think they are.
They very well could be. What I do know is, I just read this morning, is I think it's 2 weeks from now, Michigan is going to start paying anyone who moves to Michigan to buy a house $25,000 to live in that house. So if you buy the dollar house or the $1,000 neighborhood, you're getting $25,000 for actually living there yourself, which is not a terrible deal. What that should be doing, the idea being that will remove some of the edge of the tax burden that comes along with that. As Detroit seems to be 5 or 10 years ahead of us in terms of housing bubble and overall urban decline. their thought being that, you know, what's keeping people from moving back into the area is these overwhelming tax burdens that were the byproduct of the communities trying to slowly raise taxes as things got worse and worse. But now, since the areas have become abandoned, they're left both with these incredibly high taxes, taxes that are attached to the properties when nobody's living there, even though they're selling at incredibly low prices. So those taxes need to be taken care of almost immediately. So by offering $25,000 to actually move into one of these homes, it should be able to shave off some of the pain from buying one of those properties.
A friend of mine is from Detroit, and she's spending the summer doing community gardening work there, and she's really excited. And it was like sort of funny for me, sort of in, I think just this year, sort of coming from the position of thinking, man, doing community gardens in Detroit would be such a drag, to like sort of getting into this mindset that it seems a lot of people from Michigan have, which is like, you know, we are living in the future.
Right.
Like everyone else in the United States is going to be pushed to this point where it's like our cities are so screwed up, our economy is so screwed up, we have to make big changes. At this point, they're all still in denial. Detroit is like 10 years, like you said, 10 years in the future. So it's like kind of like saying either that's scary to be living in the future or it's like very exciting and very cool. So this idea of like how do we rebuild a city when we realize that a city has good parts and bad parts and needs to be changed.
It seems like you have to work to find a lot of these stories because they're not too popular for mainstream press. But from what I've been able to gather, there have been large groups of artists and community housing-minded folks that have been moving to areas like Detroit for the purpose of shared housing. You know, if you're an artist that is not necessarily flush with cash, getting together with a few other artists, you can buy a large home for relatively low cost, something that is unheard of in most urban areas, still be a part of what is a functioning city. I mean, Detroit hasn't been abandoned yet. It just so happens that many of the residential areas are not, you know, they're not being lived in the way one would expect it. But the more dense, the cat is revolting, telling us that the time is almost up.
Point up again.
Or that one.
Right there.
All right. But I mean, the idea of actually pooling resources to buy some of these properties, and it works for the city too, right? I mean, you're bringing in exactly the kind of creative-minded people that you would want to have in an urban area with almost no cost to the city. It's just happening organically. Of course, they had to kind of lose everything that they had going for them in terms of the city to get to that point. But like you said, Detroit is one of those areas that it appears from the outside almost be a blank slate. They're able to redefine themselves as a modern urban area and move forward as opposed to try and make gradual changes that you're always going to find resistance to from an existing population.
I mean, I think you see this in Worcester too, you know, with people, you know, sort of the punk house movement in the city or whatever. A lot of creative people, you know, out of college, sharing housing in wherever they can get a cheap house and wherever the city's not enforcing zoning too strongly. And it's unfortunate that, I don't know, sometimes I think that, like, I would like to see the city basically slack way down on zoning and go way up on the noise ordinance.
Yeah.
And just say, if you're not causing problems, you can have, and you're not, you know, you can have, you know, whatever, 8 unrelated people in a 4-bedroom house.
Right.
And, like,
nothing bad is actually going to
happen.
It's
not unsanitary.
There's nothing.
It might be unsanitary, but not necessarily.
That's
not
really a health risk.
Bad way. Yeah, exactly. And that's, there aren't many examples, you know, for us in modern times to actually see a city be able to redefine itself in that way with without a lot of resistance. At this point, I think Detroit would like to see anybody move back into the city. So if they're, especially if they're being able to bring in creative-minded people, younger people that in all likelihood could stay there. Difference, of course, being if you wanted to put together a community housing here in Worcester, you're going to have to deal with, you know, existing property values. Whereas in Detroit, again, you can buy a house for, you could hop on realtor.com right now and see a house selling for $100 or $200.
Mm-hmm.
A lot easier for 4 or 5 people to get together and say, hey, let's buy this $100
house.
Let's
buy the neighbor's house who's complaining.
Instead of buying this $400,000
house. Instead of going out to dinner.
Right. Exactly. Just this one time. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. And of course, it's not a quick fix for Detroit, but long-term, it could be very meaningful if they can continue those people moving in. Very similar to what happened in Baltimore. You know, when they did their dollar housing deal back in the 70s, the majority of people who moved in were artists that rehabbed all those beautiful row houses on their own. And now, if you, at least in the Inner Harbor area, you have this incredible, incredibly vibrant community, a lot of still artists and writers and what have you. The rest of the city still has a lot of work to be done, but where they focused for those dollar houses, an incredible turnaround in a relatively short period of time. I mean, it's 20, 30 years, but still relative to what it takes to build up a city, not a huge amount of time to see that sort of turnaround in one particular area.
Vision, ladies and gentlemen, vision. This has been the 508 Show. I'm Mike Benedetti with Tracy Novick. How's it going?
Good.
Brendan Malikan.
Pleasure as always.
And We will see you guys next week.